Sorry, Mick. I just accidentally stopped your video instead of making you a panelist. Show yourself.
I can't start my video now because you stopped it, apparently.
Sorry about that. I'm fixing it. I'm fixing it. Too many people are joining. So does that have everyone? Steph, are you co-host? Should be now. Okay, so this should be the final session of CNSP. This should be pretty. I'll just be honest, I don't have anything prepared for this. I thought this would just be something like you all can come in and bring us your questions and we'll do our best to answer it. Or if you have things that you thought might be interesting to talk about, maybe some of us have like something prepared, I don't know, but nothing is prepared on my end, so we tried that one time, but I don't think we'd try that again. This is my cat that looks like the cat in Ola's picture. His name's Cosmo, and he's really stupid. He's actually really smart, but he looks really dumb.
Was there all the time.
He came in yesterday during the tutorial, I think, because he could hear me talking the whole time. He wasn't in here today. No, he just came in today.
I mean, there are a couple of things that we can keep for the end,
Yeah.
which are maybe about the, what's next.
Sure.
But maybe let's see if someone has more specific questions before we get into that.
I don't know if this is going to help, but there might be questions for Ola or Marlies, so I'm going to make you all co-host as well, just in case. No, everyone understood everything perfectly. That's great.
See, I wasn't in track. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just not to ask a question or so, but I noticed that the Cohere email they asked to hand in or make like an overview of all available natural speech data sets. And I think like making a good overview is a very, very nice and good start. So maybe because we have added our or the details of our data set, it might be cool just to make sure that everyone who knows like data sets that the overview is full. So then go to the Cohere stuff and there's a Google form where you can give all the details of your data set. Might also be good to keep track of.
How do you think we would be able to find that in just like
Oh yeah.
Cohere data set?
Yeah, I'll put the link in the chat. This is to to add your data sets, and if you want
Oh yeah, I
to
remember this.
join the Cohere sessions, then you should send a request to this email for probably you're all in there already, but just for people who want to join, it's very like it will re turn this Thursday, I guess, and it's always super nice seminars. So just as a general remark or so.
I would double that. I like Cog here. It's one of my favorite online conferences aside from CNSP, I guess. Lucas Parra told us yesterday in the practice session not to be afraid of silence because silence makes people talk.
Does anyone want to bring up any points, any questions?
I wasn't in track number one. Would anyone from track number one want to say like something cool they learned in that track?
Well, I'm not a Python person. I'm slowly learning, and I learned that it's not as hard as you might think it is. I was able to keep a it has nothing to do with the tutorial, but well, aside from maybe like how well it was organized in the code, or maybe that's just Colab or something. But props to Marlies for using Colab, I guess. But I was able to follow along just fine. I also learned that the Eelbrain has some pretty cool features to it that are kind of embedded already, giving me some ideas. Mick. Oh, Mick, also, MTRF people. You know the onset and offset artifacts that we sometimes get? It's not just us. It was also in Marley's data, or at least in the analysis that she showed. Some of the TRFs she showed had those same onset and offset like spikes. And she gave an explanation that's pretty much in line with at least my thinking, and that it's like trying to predict things that are like off out just outside the window.
Yeah, I think including the bias term is supposed to help that a bit, but I think it's more to do with how you condition your data.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much the bias. Sorry, Ola.
I think can't that also be due to the time lags when you z-score your data? Isn't that you remember that we this like I have one plot in my tutorial track where you can see that if you say you z-score the envelope, you'll end up with like a baseline that's below zero, and then if you zero pad, you'll get like this step function at the beginning. And I've tried it once, the same analysis on the envelope TRF with and without z-scoring. And so with z-scoring, you're getting this step because you're pushing the baseline below zero. And then without z-scoring, you see it like on the same level. And then without z-scoring, I didn't see this like rise to the end. And with z-scoring, I saw it. So I figured it might be due to this like step that you're creating.
Yeah, TRF has a hard time with those discontinuities.
But in Eelbrain, there's no padding or so involved, so...
And also in Eelbrain, there's not really an issue with getting a weight that's not zero, because it all starts at zero and then it's the kernel's added on top of it.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's weird though. Like maybe I'll just show my screen just to illustrate like what I was seeing. But they have this. These were clipped from 0 to 500. So the way I'm interpreting this is that you've got an artifact here and an artifact here just before 500, or maybe these are offset a little bit, and maybe this is actually 500. But it does a little bit of fitting before your TMIN, I guess, because you have to introduce that like. That like the other side of the kernel, but yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
Anyway, just to show everyone what we're talking about. So it's not just us that sucks. And she also had a pretty much the same like solution that we do is we fit a little bit beyond what we want and then shrink it down. No?
So everyone is pretty happy with the MTRF methods we have at the moment. Nobody wants something better. Like, I got particularly frustrated with the time invariance assumption. So this assumption that basically every time you hear a sound, like you hear a click or whatever, the response is going to have the exact same timing, let's say, which is also what causes that those big, large responses for the N400. So, I've been thinking about having a model that, in the TRF, basically, if you say, 400 milliseconds, that is the lag. But that is always that. You assume that 400 millisecond responds the same across time, right? It's always at 400 milliseconds. While, Ed with Dennis. What's Dennis' surname, Mick? Dennis Drennan. He showed, it was known already, but in the context of continuous sounds, he showed how that's absolutely not true. So you got, he did this cool study where basically we're having this envelope. I don't know if some of you have seen that, but basically it was splitting the envelope into different envelopes. One was capturing the loud sounds and the other the less loud and less loud and less loud portion of the sound, and basically showing that, the louder it is, the earlier the response is. Is that right? So the latency changes for different levels of, magnitude of the envelope, not to say loudness. But in the same way for different words of different length, you would have responses to different latencies. So I was considering looking into models like mixed models or something like that. I don't know, some sort of kernel models that don't have this time invariance. That's exactly the paper. Yeah, the figure looks ugly, but the concept was clear. I think where he shows the actual colorful TRF. There. Basically, for different amplitude bands, the response changes latency. And so with the normal TRF, you just get a large component, when in reality, for different loudness, you will have small different components at different latencies. So pretty frustrating.
I mentioned this yesterday, but Jen has also been using deep neural nets to fit the timing of, like, when an N400 should be, like, for example,
what?
Based on,
observability.
I think it, the thinking behind it is that, like, as we're like listening to words, we like gain an understanding of what that word is at different points in the word. And so the Michael Broderick paper just puts an impulse at the start of the word, but that's not necessarily where we. And then also all the old N400 papers, they do like time aligning to the beginning of the surprising or not surprising word. So we're assuming the beginning of the word is like when the comprehension is yoked to, and that there's some like single, like one lag after the word onset when we understand the word. But it could be like toward the end of the word or middle of the word, depending on how long the word is. So like his neural net model, like, is fitting the N400 and allowing it to like change across time to get the best fit. And we do find that, like, I don't know the details, but it does improve the fit. And there does seem to be some relationship between something to do with the words and the latency at which the N400 appears. So something like
but
that.
But I think this doesn't address Giovanni's problem, right? Because I think what Jin does, I mean, he does like somehow like warp the TRF around with his deep learning, but you still end up with like one TRF. So that TRF still would say that if you have like one stimulus, it is the response. Yeah. And then if you have the same stimulus again, it is still the same response. While I think what Giovanni is suggesting is that the response, like playing the same stimulus twice in a row, should have like the second one should have somehow a response that depends on the first one. And I'm not sure if Jin's model incorporates that.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I suppose, I mean, my question is more of a general method that would apply in any case. But I get your point, Aaron. I mean, I got it as a comment when I submitted the paper. I can't remember when, maybe at InterSpeech. And the reviewer was like, oh, but why did he use the onset? Why didn't he use the uniqueness point and that sort of stuff? Which, yeah, it's a different question, but it's I wonder if there is a solution.
We have wrapped our heads around that issue as well, but it's not a tricky, it's not easy to solve. I think the solution, and we have tried to, but not successfully, like it's really a completely new way of calculating or predicting your neural responses by for example allowing like you said, allowing also latencies. So first you need to learn the peak, and then you need to also learn that the latency can move depending on a value, but that's very, very tricky.
Because I was thinking, I mean, if you drop one assumption, you may have to introduce more, so mm-hmm. more problems, of course. But let's say that you assume, because the current TRF doesn't assume how many peaks we have. But as you say, let's assume that there are three peaks. There is, I don't know, there is the P1, the, I don't know, the P1 and 1, P2.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that you fit the TRF normally, and you say, we know that it's centered there. So on average, it's there. But then we tolerate some variability due to certain parameters. Mm-hmm. We need to write the math. That's the problem now. But maybe Lucas has some ideas, since he's so into the math part. I can see there could be a couple of formulations. The question is, would it be worth it or not? Because overall, I mean, EEG is rubbish anyway. So are we going to be able to do anything better? I don't know. But using Lucas methods, if we assume consistency maybe across participants, you see, rather than across, like if you assume the uniqueness point of that Aaron was mentioning there, maybe if we use like the method that Lucas is using, like inter-subject correlation ISC there, or maybe using, you know, MCCA, which is the same thing really, getting this ground truth, this basically component across participants, maybe then we could try to fit these models. But does anyone has hands to do that? I don't have a mathematician at the moment in the team, so can't do that. Maybe Ole. How do you pronounce your name? Ole, Ola, Ola, Ole.
Yeah, Ole. The first try was good.
Ole. Nice to meet you finally, by the way. I've exchanged emails as well. I've been using your work now. So that's great stuff. But yeah, maybe you have some math background or
physics. No, not at all.
This is all magic to us, Joe. Did you know that? Yeah.
And it works. Any other funky question? Thank you, Mick, for spotting the typo on the title of the paper, by the way.
Ed also shared that with me.
I also caused it.
Ed caused it, and he fixed one thing and created another issue. Can I just repeat something that you said already, Aaron?
Yeah.
If any of the people in the room, you know, would like to get involved in any, you know, at any level, just give us a shout. You know, we've been doing this for 3 years now. We'll keep doing this. We need to figure out in which format, I'll keep doing this stuff anyway. So your involvement can be like anything. You have a data set and you want to share it, or you have shared it anyway and you want to say, oh, I have shared this data set. Do you want to put it in a website? And do you have a function? There is a bug, there is anything, you know, that's any level of involvement. The thing is that, of course, we have a limited number of hands. So when there is, sometimes we receive bug reports and we just don't have a particular person correcting bugs at the moment. So we'll aim to apply for grants for that. So that's one of the things that we'll discuss, you know, later on. I was looking, Aaron, into grants for supporting the development of scientific software. So there are some, there are particular applications. They're not the usual grant applications we would go for. So I might get in touch in a month or two when I have more bandwidth and we can talk about submitting something for, you know, getting a research assistant on this for a couple of years would be incredible, you know, to fix all the bugs and bring some things, you know, to completion.
Are those grants going through like an Irish thing, or is it Euro Council, or is where are they?
A variety of things. I've seen some companies, they give some free money basically.
Yeah.
For encouraging this kind of stuff. I think there was from the classic Google thing to other foundations that support this kind of activities. The bigger ones, I haven't found any of the Irish things yet. If anyone has any ideas, you know, let us know.
What happened to the dude who contacted Ed about putting the MTRF toolbox on MATLAB? I know it's an add-on on MATLAB now that you can get through MATLAB, but I thought they were going to help us with editing the code at some.
True, they had mentioned that.
They contacted us a few times about going in for a grant or something like that, but it never really went anywhere.
Hmm. It's too bad.
Actually, one thing I meant to ask Ole about regarding the tutorial. So he was talking about how when you're doing your statistical inference, you know, you can kind of test whether or not the correlation you get, the performance value you get is significant or not by doing a permutation test on the data. And obviously doing that correctly takes a lot of time, right? Because you have to, you know, scramble the order of how your data is matched or paired and run the analysis. We've talked about a kind of a slightly ACT way of doing that, where instead of mismatching your data and trying to compute the mapping, you just calculate the correlation between your prediction and a different trial. And I was just wondering, is that in any way valid, or would you get this? Do you know have you tried that?
We recently had a very similar discussion in our lab meeting, and I don't know. I'm planning on testing that out. Also, one suggestion Ed recently had is for if you do this for a decoder, of course the amount is like massively increased.
Time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That this would be it would be really, really useful to do this approach. I think what did you said you're comparing the correlation on the to any other trial?
Yeah, exactly. So you fit all of
prediction.
You fit all of your correct models, and then the prediction of those models is compared to the wrong trial. Instead of mismatching the stimulus and EEG at the training stage, because obviously it's the training stage that takes
time.
But I'm not sure if they necessarily kind of give you the same null distribution.
I don't think they're going to give you the same distribution. I mean, numerically, they might be very similar. And I think that was the end point of like our Ola and my talks about this, is that probably going to be the same like ultimate distribution numbers wise. But conceptually, I think it's not the same at all. And one, you're trying to fit a shit model, and the other, you're trying to use a good model to do shit.
And yeah, I mean, of course, you're doing something else, but I think the important question is whether this gives you like a good approximation of the true permutation distribution, right? And if, yeah, I mean, if like, you can show that it's a good approximation, but I think, it's definitely something worth testing, I think.
I think it would be important to like vary the conditions in which you're testing that, because I think under like optimal conditions, you're going to get pretty much the same distribution.
Hmm.
But I think there might be some like edge cases where that doesn't work. Now, maybe not even edge cases, but like the thing that pops out immediately is what Nate was trying to do, is trying to use permute like tracking for music. And if you have multiple like different styles of music, for example, and you fit it's not really a fair comparison to try to get a good model to predict the wrong kind of music, because the wrong kind of music has all kinds of different statistics, like it moves slower or it could move faster, so that distribution might not be applicable. And that's why he would use like the circular shift to keep the statistics in the same fit and train in the model, because his other trials he couldn't actually shuffle the trials because it would like not be a good null distribution. So
you would still have the same distribution when you're predicting a different trial, no? That different trial would still have the correct sort of overall statistics of the stimulus.
Yeah, except you wouldn't try to predict a different trial. The way I would do a permutation test is to shuffle on the train and then try to predict the right trial with that bad model.
Yeah, but then you have to do all the training, right? The idea
was
to like avoid having to do all the training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the optimal situation, you can avoid that. But I think to be like careful in those edge cases, I'm not sure if you can avoid that.
Yeah.
The risk increases with the complexity of the features in the stimulus. So that is the problem we had dealt with Nate, I think, or Mick. It's just instead of correlating a different trial, you use a different stimulus for your prediction, which is the same thing. But the difference is whether, you know, if your model is particularly sensitive to the lambda, in the sense that if you have a shite model fit, like you shuffle your training, and the question is there, okay, I had an optimal lambda of 1. With the correct order. Now I'm shuffling and I get an optimal lambda of 1,000, right? Does that 1,000 give me more? And of course your baseline is going to be higher, marginally higher. Remember, we just have one hyperparameter. So if we were talking about CCA, I would tell you don't do that, because it would be a tragedy. You're missing all the overfitting in your consideration for the random distribution. But with the TRF, in my experience, it doesn't make much of a difference. To the point that if you want to get 1,000 shuffles, it may be justifiable to do it that way.
Are you mean with one lambda and not optimizing?
No, I'm just...
Or do you mean fitting a good model and predicting wrong data?
If you're talking about the univariate model or a model with 2 or 3 features, the risk for overfitting in that sense is really little compared to a CCA.
Yeah.
So I tried, small... In my own experiments, and the difference was not that problematic, not that big. Of course, in my view, there is one optimal shuffle, which is if you retrain everything, because that takes into account the risk for overfitting the hyperparameter in that case, with the hyperparameter choice. The other one is a weaker shuffle, that's all.
Mm.
But if it is computationally... you know, infeasible to run 1,000 permutations. I'm doing that now with one of the students, and it's like, I can't refit this thing 1,000 times. It takes ages. And I'm like, okay, just do it the other way. Let's see how, if it is substantially like higher, you know, it's fine. If it is threshold, close to threshold, then yeah, it's tricky.
Sorry. Also, in the end, it's still whatever we're getting out there is just a p-value, and the p-value in itself isn't really all that meaningful, right? It's just tells you whether the effect is like non-random under normal distribution, which is often like a very limited like conclusion, which might not be worth like having to run like code for days and days to go through all the permutations.
Exactly. You're talking like an engineer now. That's good.
But the reviewers want a p-value.
No, they don't want it anymore, Aaron. They want the p-value, they want the effect size, they want all the possible statistics around it.
I mean, that's a pretty good point, I think, Ola, is that, I mean, at the end of the day, we're chasing a stupidly reduced, like, metric here. I mean, we've got a lot better metrics to use than that. I mean, that might be the straw that puts me in my place, finally.
Yeah, what I thought about is there, I mean, I haven't, like, come to anything yet, but since I, like, dabbled a bit into, like, Bayesian statistics, whether you could do something like a Bayesian implementation of the TRF, where you would then in the end in your TRF, you wouldn't just get a single line, but you would rather get like a posterior distribution for the TRF. And in that way you could sort of judge from the distribution like how certain you are in your estimate that you're at like certain points.
Maybe you can do that.
I mean, probably someone can do that. I'm not sure if I can do that.
Sure, I could do that.
And one thing is for sure, we need to increase the size of those effect size. We need to increase those effect sizes. Mm. Those metrics are very small. And so the thing is that how do you do it? So I've been working on this in a couple of ways. And one of the things is with the baby study that I'm about to publish, woo, after like 4 years, and
oh, the learning the phoneme tracking.
Yes, so Georgia is in that one. That's still a secret. We can't say, but it's very good. And in that case, for measuring, so because the data from babies is rubbish. I mean, it's not that, you know, it's really, really noisy. Said it in simple words. So there are one thing that the reviewers were complaining about was the result was coming out with the usual analysis. But then they were like, yeah, but the effect size is so small. Are you really sure? So what we did was the problem with the statistics was that the numbers were so unstable between different babies because of the noise, it was little data. So I was thinking of using MCCA there. And in which way? In the end, I didn't use MCCA. We average across subjects, which is horrible, but it works. In which way? This was Alan's idea from ages ago, getting a ground truth signal. So you assume that all the subjects have the same response, which is a false assumption, but you make it every time you average TRFs. So you have the same assumption. And so you average the EEG across all participants or across the left out portion anyway, or whatever. And when you do your prediction, you fit your model, you predict your EEG, and you correlate your prediction not with the data from that subject, but with the average participant, which is different from the generic model. With generic model, we were averaging the participants. Now we are using the single subject model, and assuming that we are getting the actual ground truth behind the signal, we are correlating that with the ground truth. So the results are a little bit more stable. But a good bit more stable, even though the TRF is the same.
Neat. Yeah. Wait, so you average people's EEGs?
Yes, Alan would be disgusted. We had done it with MCCA, it was working. The problem is that with MCCA, you have these parameters to choose, and the reviewers were not super happy of that. How do you choose them? And it sounds lots of hand picking. So we said, okay, we'll just average across participants. You can't say anything, and it still works. So so we just went for that. But we had 50 participants, so it was quite a bit.
I'm looking forward to that one. What else?
I'm thinking the agenda is the future.
I mean, yeah, we could.
About cats.
I don't want to belabor it here, though. If like no one has any questions, I don't want to like keep people on the hook. You know. What do you think? Should we call it? Anyone want to pipe in? No? Okay. I'm going to call it then. Unless Joe objects and then wants to talk about the future.
Yeah. I guess the last thing we could mention is that, like, about the research application, the research grant application. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe we can email this out. There's only two people here. Yeah.
You mean the project thing?
Yeah.
I mean, now that, yeah. Is there a link? Is that link?
Yeah. That's the link to the PDF kind of advertisement that has the Google Drive, the Google Form URL embedded into it.
Right. What's the deadline? Going to, Sunday.
I'm going to copy that link into the chat.
Oh, you're the 3rd Saturday. Yeah. Yeah, we got a good few applications last year. Various, some people wanted to come for a week, other people for a month. And the way we did it last year was to get all the organizers to vote and all the speakers to vote as well, to make it a little bit more, I say, less biased. If that makes sense.
So it ended up being like we had two each to look over. Is that right?
I think so.
That seems fine to me.
Yeah.
Joe, did you want to talk about the future or should we go?
I suppose just 1 minute. I mean, we can leave the participants, free if they like. But you're free to stay just for a couple of minutes. One thing is, you know, it could be also a good time to start thinking about, do we want to get someone else in the organization for the future? That's one thing to keep in mind, because I know that once we close this call, like last year, we'll disappear, apart from the project, we'll disappear, and it will be very hard to reach people over email. So that's why I'm asking you to bear with me now. So Nate is already gone, and I don't expect him to be much more active in the next couple of months. So
my contribution... He did mention to me that he felt compelled to help next year. I mean, he didn't say I feel compelled. Yeah. He said, maybe I need to help out again next year. So he might be back on board.
And that's fantastic. I'm just saying, helping with the workshop is not what I'm talking about here.
The initiative.
The thing is... you know, in the last year, I spent a lot of time trying to put these things together. So it was a lot of effort, and I need a break. So I won't be working on this for the next couple of months anyway. Certainly, you know, from December, after the teaching of the first semester is over, I can get back to it. I'm just dreading when we'll have a few people asking for bug fixes and stuff, and I won't have the hands to fix that stuff. So as long as there is a plan for the future, it doesn't have to be a plan for January, but a plan even for next September. So that's why I'm saying the kind of effort I'm going to put in here is to figure out some grant or something, and maybe we can get Ed to get in touch with that guy again to figure out some money, because even if it was a part-time research assistant or something like that, that could be super helpful. Students don't like this kind of projects. They want to do all the students want to do projects with me, the master students. They want to do scientific projects rather than a toolbox. It may be tricky to figure that out. But I'll keep doing it myself, but I'll be slow. So raising money is one thing. And then it might be time also when what Marlis was saying about this, the COG here. They're trying to collect, that's Malcolm, of course, trying to collect all the different resources, different data sets and stuff. That's great for us in a way, because once we have those data sets in whatever format, we can, you know, put them in CND as well and get this try to get more out of this. The question is, what do we do? We could try to reach out to people to see if someone would like to get their hands dirty. Maybe also someone has more time or more competence than I have. Or do you think applying for money is the better route? What do people think?
I think the most successful is probably going to be trying to get some money, and then like having something for someone, like a motivation. I think it's going to take someone that's like paid to like take over some of the heavy lifting on those things.
Yeah, it was all feasible while I was a postdoc. Now things are getting trickier, you know. There are too many PhD students to take care of, so things go slowly. I got a couple of PhD students to help this year. So the graphical interface, Martin, he helped quite a bit with that, and the research assistant I had for 3 months, she helped quite a bit with that as well. But yeah, maybe it's time to get some money and get someone specifically for this project. But I need some help to find these grants, and you know, having also being also in different countries, we could have a better reach.
Yeah, and that doesn't, I mean, I don't know if I can submit anything. Where I could submit something to as a postdoc, or I mean, pretty soon I'm going to be a non-tenure track faculty. So I don't know if that'll open up any doors for me for like NSF or NIH or anything. Well, NIH for sure. I don't know about NSF.
I was looking with that, but I can't apply with that. With these Irish/American, you know, US-Irish collaborations.
Because you were his grad student?
No, that's the problem. I can't apply with that because I was his grad student. So
that's what I was saying. You can. You have like that conflict of interest. And not really maybe, conflict of interest.
Yeah, you know, it has to be a new thing, etc. Yeah. Not a new thing, but also not with your supervisor, maybe. But maybe with one of you guys, with you, if you have this new position, Aaron, maybe even getting money for a short amount of time that fits your contract. Do you have a start date?
No. Should be around the new year, though. I mean, my U of R has like a 5-year end of a postdoc, and that happened in September. And Ed came up to me in like August and was like, "So I didn't even think about your contract is ending, and it's ending, and we don't have a solution for that." So fortunately, the girl in BME like figured this out ahead of time and like, picked up the slack for Ed, and we got a 4-month extension on my contract so that I can formally apply. So that contract is up at the new year. So that should be when the new one hits.
Nice. Yeah, we could get Mick in as a company. Like, we already have a network. You know, thing is finding the calls, etc. So maybe if everyone can keep an eye out on calls. Mm-hmm. I mean, Stephanie, you're just starting your postdoc, so don't worry about calls now. Just relax.
You should be worrying about those F-32 calls.
Relax now
a little bit.
I'm super confused about how postdoc funding is going to work out, because I was given a fellowship through the school, so I'm like trying to figure out, I haven't even spent time trying to figure out how like applying to funding as a postdoc works when you're not like, when you don't need a stipend for yourself. Like, when do you start transitioning to like fellowship money, or when do you apply to the
You could be paid off of a grant, and then you can have funding through someone else. Like, you paid off your PI's grant, or you have a T32 or something like that from a department, but then you get your own funding and you just pull off of that funding onto your own whenever you want.
Like, if I have my stipend completely covered.
Yep.
From my university. Like, would I apply to like postdoc fellowships from the NIH and then just not take the money? Because like,
No, you would take the NIH money and give. I mean, I don't know exactly how you would want to do it or how they would do it at your department, but like at Vanderbilt, like I could have been on a T-32, then I applied to an F-31, and the plan would have been that I would have relinquished the T-32 money, which is the department's money, and then taken my own F-31 money or F-30, whichever one it was for pre-doctoral. And I mean, it's going to be about the same amount of money. You might even get more money with your own personal funding, but like the way I understood the T-32 is that was just a spot for whoever. I took it up. And if I wasn't taking that spot, someone else could have it.
I see. They hired me at Brown as an employee. So I don't know where that money's coming from. I guess it's coming from the fellowship. Like I have an internal university fellowship. So then it would offset some of that money. And So it's the same as undergrad. It's the same as grad school where.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
That's the way it sounds like it would have been for me.
Anyway, what I do, I don't know if you saw that link I was sharing earlier on.
The Imperial College. I got that.
Oh, this one. No, wait. I don't know. Oh, Imperial College. Yeah. I mean, this kind of stuff, they're all very different from what I'm used to look at.
Yeah.
But what I could do is to find one of these, write a grant for it. Maybe, you know, I can't do it now until November, December, but maybe in December I start drafting something for one of these things. And some of these, like this one seems to be like free money. I don't remember where it was.
I don't remember. One of these
was free
that
money. Basically.
Works out pretty well for me.
Which
actually.
Timeline? Oh,
like
the
if
December.
If you want to start at like November, December on writing something, if it's something that's going to benefit from having like some like transatlantic collaboration, that timing would work out great for me.
I mean, I see a deadline here for a letter of intent. These things are usually fairly relaxed. I mean, for this one, for example, I could try. Worst case scenario, they say no. I write it quickly. And if it goes well, this could be one. But again, I'm not, I don't care about deadlines. I'm just saying there could be other things here. Small development grants. I don't know.
Maybe we have a look through some of these and make some notes and see which one are going to be the most feasible for what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Cool.
I know that for the Irish one, for the Irish US, we need to ask Ed because he knows how that works. There might have to be a Northern Irish partner as well. I'm not sure, but there are a few. But if we got that, like if we got one person working on this part-time, even just part-time, for a couple of years, that would change everything. Because I've seen how this RA worked for me for 3 months, and it's just incredible, you know, the amount of work they can do when that they do that full-time, you know, writing documentation and fixing bugs, you know, the web data browser could actually become a thing. Because at the moment, the web data browser, I don't know if you did you see it?
Yeah, I didn't use it, but I mean, I went to it and like messed around.
It has very few parameters for
it.
Now. What's that?
I tried it.
Okay.
Well, yesterday, right? You sure it yesterday?
Yeah.
It's really nice. It looks really different from before.
Yeah, I mean it's not it's slow, of course. But again, the speed depends on how much money you pay. For now, we don't pay anything. It runs completely on Ole's version of the TRF toolbox. And the idea would be to, like here you have the CNSP data browser with all the options, basically, right? Pre-processing, TRF, all this stuff works. All the data sets take imagery and suddenly have all the different features here. And different conditions, you know. The idea would be to have a data browser with that, And then you can load the eBrain functions, you can load the neural networks, you can load, well, it doesn't have to be on the MTRF. It's just something that you can, where you can do this stuff easily, which it greatly helps me when I talk with people that are more on the applied side. Like I'm trying to get people, you know, to build new collaborations on autism, for example, research. And they're like, oh, but the experiments can be just to this length and that sort of stuff. You just go there and it's really useful, you know. Maybe you don't even get a paper out of it, but you can get new collaborations maybe. But it's just a proof of concept. It's not feasible to keep it up there because, yeah, it's free at the moment. We have a limited number of calls we can do.
Oh, really? Like if someone runs something, like it's N minus one that is left, or is it a time limited thing? Like you can only do N per unit time?
N calls per month.
Yeah.
Because otherwise after that you pay.
Yeah.
So we put a limit to whatever before we pay. But we could make it, you know, we have some funding, of course, from the workshop and stuff. So if we said, if we build something that is nice, you know, this time next year, we have a nice web browser that is cool. And we say, okay, we want to invest €300 a year. And we got a super, you know, useful thing for people. If people find it useful, we can send a poll around, but we need to build it first. It wouldn't be too hard, but it's all about getting this money. If you think it's worth it, if you don't think it's worth it, you tell me and we can just be happy on the paper and then someone else will do it in the future. We don't need to be the ones to do it.
I mean, if we're going to, I don't know, I don't think it would be too hard for us to write something to submit. I mean, those can't be that. I mean, if we're only paying for like a person, these sorts of grants can't be that long though, right? Like maybe 5 pages, 6 pages?
3 pages, 4 pages, maybe. It's a methodological grant. I mean, they're not, you don't need to go into the theoretical foundations. You know,
yeah.
it's a scientific software. So fairly easy to show that we don't have that much in our field compared to bioinformatics and other fields, you know. I don't know. I think we have a strong chance to get some money there because we have a network and we've done workshop, you know, 3 times and we see if the paper gets published and that will give us a better chance.
Yeah. I'd say we go through this list and see if we can find something that works or find a couple. I'll do that in the coming months.
Sounds great. And if you hear of any company, I'm talking with companies and stuff. Of course, they need to have a reason to do that. But some big companies like to give free money for these things, just to say that they like even a few €1,000, you know, just to get a research assistant for 6 months to start with, part time. You don't need that much money.
Do we have to slap the company's logo on the TRF like application? Like in
the acknowledgement?
NASCAR?
I don't know, but look. In Ireland, it doesn't cost that much. So I got a grant for, I think it was €20,000 for something else. And with that, I got an RA for 3 months. So it's not bad.
Damn, I want to be making €80,000 as an RA. I'm kidding.
Yeah,
I know some of that was probably indirect cost.
There was other stuff in the grant. There was some consultancy cost, etc. Maybe I don't remember how much the cost was. Maybe put 10,000, maybe. Okay. Do you want to talk about future workshop before everyone leaves? And Mick is really wants to leave because it's 9 p.m. here. Georgia is 10 p.m. over 10 there.
10 p.m.
Yeah. You want to say a couple of words about the next CNSP?
I don't have. It's not late here, so I don't care. But I would like to be respectful of the people it's really late for. So yeah, I mean, we should talk about it maybe, but shortly. I mean, I don't have anything to say about it. So what were you thinking?
I suppose just to mention once again that, like, maybe it doesn't have to be next year, but it could be 2025. I don't know. I'd love to do this with a component in person.
Yeah.
I've been in touch with someone in L'Aquila in Roma. Near Rome. I'll show it to you just to tease you. How do you spell it? Embarrassing.
Do you think an in-person one would be more like a pared down Telluride?
No, I mean, look, the goal is always to teach people, to get students to learn, rather than to get students to, you know, to work their ass off on your own project. And maybe it wouldn't be as long.
Oh, no, no, I wouldn't think there would be 2 weeks.
You know, yeah, I mean, if it was, imagine, you know, a week or 10 days, like imagine that we were still doing the workshop online that year.
Mm-hmm.
But then maybe there were 20 people.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, four or five of us, and then 15 students. They come with their data set because maybe we don't have time to record data, or they want to do something real time. I don't know. But they come with something. And we help them, you know, and we actually get some results out of it. I see it as a thing for trying something new, cool. Maybe someone can work on methods a bit like Telluride, but others could be practically people that don't know how to analyze this stuff. They come and we give them a kick, and it's good for us. We get our name in a paper. It's good to be these people because they save 3 months of work by coming and getting a good push. So, yeah. And keeping it small is also sustainable because we're not talking about getting people from all over the world. We're talking about doing a local, necessarily event and getting a few people from all over the world, but not like Telluride where you get all over the world and so many people. You know what I mean? Like 5 people extra you and the rest you, or and then another year can be in the US. I don't know.
I like it. I would like to do something in person small like that. I'm looking at pictures of this city, and the top pictures on Google Maps has like snow everywhere. And I'm like, does it snow in Italy? Or like that far south?
There is mountains there, Aaron. There is big mountains. And look at this thing. It's a beautiful location because it's cheap. It's really, how do you say, old. In terms of amazing buildings and old buildings and stuff, but this stuff, where is it? There is snow in the town here. There is mountains nearby, so you can go for hikes, no problem. And it's very good food, very and fairly cheap anyway. There was a big earthquake years ago.
And there's a Stonehenge.
There is Stonehenge?
And that's some sort of Colosseum, is it?
Yeah, it's not Stonehenge. It was something up. Just looked like Stonehenge.
But the thing is that you fly into Rome, and then you're not too far from there. So a friend of mine works there. There is a university there, a good university. He works there. He's a mathematician actually. And he was saying that it's easy to organize there if you want to, but it could be anywhere. Just Dublin is completely impractical because it's too expensive. So I was thinking about Italy because it's cheap, because I can figure things out. You know, it's all up for negotiation.
Not a bad place to hang out to.
Yeah. I mean, people can fly into Rome easily. It's a big airport.
I'm sorry. I really have to leave. Diego is about to kill me for dinner. He's calling me from the window.
That's fine. Go ahead, John. Just give us thumbs up or not for this
let's
idea.
Let's keep in touch. Like, I mean, anyway, we'll have to choose the best project, I think, in a
yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah, sounds good.
That's the shortest term goal. So we should meet anyway to vote and
yeah.
Okay. Let's take this as a teaser then, and then we can close
it here. Yeah. I think it's nicer to keep a meeting from time to time, like on a regular basis, and worst case, we just say there's nothing to do and have a chat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm also headed out. Maybe. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Ola.
Thanks, Ola.
That was brilliant. Thank you.
Cool.
Okay, do we just close it here then?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm officially almost 30. Instead of having a pint, I have an ibuprofen. at the end of CNSP.
I don't even have a pint here. What kind of... This is stupid. Might need to go get some beers.
That's why we need to do this in person. Is anyone coming to ARO this year or next year?
I don't know.
God, so...
I'm in a spot where my postdoc... Like, who would pay for me to go to ARO as a first-year postdoc?
Stephanie, I made that mistake. When I moved to Alan's lab, Alan's Finney's lab, I had some work from Ed, but I didn't want Alan to spend his money for me to present the work I did with Ed. Uh-huh. Biggest mistake of my life. I could have gone to Banff, to Auditory Cortex on the Rocky Mountains. Instead, I was so naive. I should have gone. Yeah. Everyone says it was amazing.
I've also heard that, and I have FOMO. All right.
That was brilliant work. That's, congratulations.
Yeah,
good job, everyone. I'll schedule something for whenever we start getting project proposals. I'll probably send out a new email soon, maybe tomorrow.
Sounds
to the participants. Do you want that to be just the participants that get it, or should we also advertise on Twitter, stuff like that?
What did we do last year? Just participants last year.
I don't really see any reason to not open it up to everyone. Would listen to reasons not to.
It's usually something that, you know, when you go to a conference, there is a travel grant of the conference.
I see.
Understand the conference is not in person. You could open it up to all the CNSP people, like to all the mailing list of the Google group, if that made sense. More applications are fine. But if you open it up to people that don't know what we're talking about here, I'm just afraid that they'll do their own thing. Like the point is that they should also use our kind of resources and contribute to the initiative in some way, like Giorgio did. You know, he's going to share it when he has the data set. He's going to share it on the website, and he gave a talk. And
these details are in the call, right? They say that you need to be able to share everything after you're done.
sharing on the CNSP platform. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, and they explain it in the talk as well. I mean, maybe all the list of emails of everyone that ever participated in the workshop, if you have it handy. Other than the Google group is fine.
I don't think I'd have one handy. I can maybe look and see if there's... I think there's something from last year. I might look through that and add those names to it. Cool.
Yeah, Georgia awesome. Had the Google form for last year. Anyway, thanks, Amelia. That was brilliant. I didn't do anything, and I'm glad to see that I'm absolutely redundant. The X was a bit harsh, I have to say. But I'll give you a report on the money, on how much we have. That could be useful. By the way, sorry. That's going to be used for the paper part of it. So I'll let you know. I'll let you know how that goes. We have double than what we need. So if you have ideas, you're more than welcome. Otherwise, we can use them to top up whatever grant we get for the research assistant, you know.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Mick, you could give us money.
Me personally?
Yeah, you work in a company. You have lots of money. You know,
should company have... that has no money.
then we should apply you together.
They barely have enough to pay me.
We should apply together, though. Okay, we'll catch up for a pint next week, Mick. And I'm sorry, we won't catch up for a pint for a while if you don't come to ARO.
Yeah,
I'm
gonna see if I can. Probably won't.
Please come. Thanks a million, everyone.
Yeah. See ya.
Ciao.
Bye, doggo.